Yeah, so we're starting the second paragraph. Give him a little hour. No, it's fine. I'll start. Mishnah said, "Kol yada mar belutik." Any hand that does a lot of bedikus. We said that women in the previous paragraph. We said women have to do a lot of bedikus. So banoshim, when women do it mishubachas, then it's praiseworthy. The more often they check, the less chance of sofik tumah. With that said, by the way, there are achronim that talk about, for example. Well, it doesn't mean, for example, I mean, the Shevet HaLevi, for example, one of the Achronim, it's one of the more or less contemporary Achronim from the previous generation, the Shevet HaLevi says, and we're not talking about what she does it obsessively, like she does it every 5 minutes or something like that. You know, first of all, that's no good. Second of all, also, yeah, that itself could make her bleed. Also, Moshe Feinstein points out another point also. We're going to learn towards the end of the parak that there are only certain shades of blood that are Mekameh her. On a Daraisa level. Nowadays, we don't have the expertise to recognize those particular shades, so we have to be metame, misophic, certain other shades, like certain shades of yellow or whatever, because they might be a little bit reddish. So therefore, if she checks too often nowadays and you have a problem, there may be yellow discharges over there, which she's going to think is tome, and they're really not. So when we... Well, fine, but so the rub also might have to be metame because of the suffix. So the bottom...
I could see you don't better than you know.
No. Even modern technology doesn't help because you have to be able to recognize the particular shades that the Gemara is talking about, and you have to have a keen eye for it. No, not necessarily. So Rav Moshe writes that when we say over here kolayada marbalubik benoshim, we don't mean nowadays necessarily so much. It's more like that. Okay. But on the other hand, with a man, if he checks himself often to see whether he's tummy from Tomas Kerry, then his hand deserves to be cut off, because what the result is by stimulating and by rubbing that area and touching it or whatever, he's likely to be moitzi zera. And as the Gemara is going to say, the story is that there. No, so that's the thing. So if he finds Kerry in his clothes or on his bed sheets or whatever, okay, obviously he knows his stomach. But the point is, unlike a woman who should be taking a cloth and putting it in and checking, a man shouldn't be feeling around that area to check it. So the Gemara asks, Maishna Noshim or Maishna Noshim? What is actually the difference in that regard between women and men? The answer is, Noshim lav v'nois hagoshim. Women are not capable of hargosha. Now, what do we mean by that? Obviously, women have hargosha. We mentioned in the previous parak about hargosha that they feel when they become nida. But here what we mean is, so there's a few explanations. One of them is that physiologically, the fact is, you know, if they have a man produces sperm, a woman produces eggs, a man can stimulate producing sperm by rubbing and touching that area. A woman can't stimulate producing eggs that way. So there's no possibility that her moving around, putting her fingers or doing ridiculous or whatever is going to cause her to produce an egg where she otherwise wouldn't. Tosfos over here, they'll give two other answers. One of them is that indeed maybe they could. Indeed maybe they are it is capable of making them produce an egg. But it doesn't matter because they don't have an issue of ashchata zera. Tosfos discusses over here, according to their first explanation, that women do not necessarily have an issue of ashchata zera, which that answer of Tosfos is very negeya lahalacha when you get into the whole question of people using contraceptives, various things to prevent becoming pregnant. There's less of an issue with women doing it than with men, and one reason is because even if a woman does something that causes the zera to not become fertile, that's less of a problem, according to what Tosfos is saying. The other answer Tosfos says is the difference is that a woman's zera, a woman's egg, remains inside her body. So even if it's produced, it can't be called that it's hashchosa, because it's not wasted. It still stays inside her body, where it belongs, whereas a man's zera comes out and goes to waste. So according to that answer, right. So women don't have that issue. Therefore, mishubasa. Therefore, if they're doing more often bedikas, then it's a good thing. And noshin gimnei hagosha, as opposed to men are capable of hagosha in the sense that they can cause by touching that area, they can cause themselves to produce zera. Therefore, tikosis. Therefore, their hand should be cut off. So Gemara says yihachi mai iria marva. In that case, why are you mentioning the case where they do a lot of it? And if they don't do it very much, isn't it also a problem? If we're saying that even one time is enough to be mostly zera, then what are we saying? Marba, like implying if he does it a lot, then it's a problem. Yeah, that's the answer. Kikatani marba anoshin tana. The answer is the word marba is referring to the women. With women, there's no problem with them doing it often, and therefore, if they're doing it twice a day, like they're supposed to, even at times of the month where there's no reason to suspect that they're going to be tame, nevertheless, mishubacha. But it's true that for men, they shouldn't be doing it at all. So Gemara says, Tana, we learn in a Braisa. What are we talking about? We're saying that men shouldn't be checking, is only if they're checking whether they're Tomei from Shechvas Zera. But if they have to check whether they're a Zov, Ahu Meshubach Kanoshin. Then even if a man is checking, even a man checking is a good thing. Why? Because he needs to know. He needs to be able to count his re'iyas. He needs to know whether he has two re'iyas, which is going to be making Tomei as a Zov, or three, which is going to be Mechayiv and a Korban as well. So there, he needs to check. And the point is, Rashi points out that one definition of Zov, the difference between Zov and Shechvat Zera, is Zov comes from a limp organ, as opposed to Shechvat Zera comes from an erect one. So therefore, touching in order to check whether the zov is less of an issue that's going to cause him to be moti zera l'batala, because anyway the organ is linked then. Yeah.
Okay.
Comes from the same place, just one when he's erect and one when he's not. Okay. Ba'filu inyan shechvas zera, and continues the Gemara, even when it comes to checking for shechvas zera, it's true he shouldn't be checking by hand for the reason that we said, because then he's going to be moti zera. But in bol libdik b'tsror or b'cheres, but if he wants to check with a little stone or with a piece of earthenware, like he's going to use that to pick up that area and check, then fine. With the bodik he can do that, because then that's not going to cause a problem. That's not going to warm up. The whole problem is that rubbing it or stimulating it or warm it up or whatever is likely to lead to hisazel batala. And with these things, it won't be a problem. Okay, so the question is, matlis loy. So you're telling me then the implication is he's not allowed to use a cloth for the purpose to hold his anger. V'atanya bodik asr matlis b'koldav asheroisa. Braisa says he could check himself using a cloth or anything that he wants. So fine, he can't handle it directly by hand, but he can use a cloth. The answer is kid omer abaye b'matlis abba, just like Abaye said in a different context, that we're not talking about a thin cloth, we're talking about a thick cloth, which a thick cloth is stiff. So therefore, it's less likely to heat up the area. Hochanami matlis abba, so the same thing over here, we can say that we're talking about that he uses a thick cloth, where therefore a thick, stiff cloth is less likely to stimulate anything. Mind you, I mean, post-Gemara Achronim talk about not necessarily are we an expert in knowing what's considered thin and what's considered thick, so that particular heter is not necessarily such a well-founded one. Okay. So, Vehecha Itmer Abaye, what was the original context where Abaye said this in? Aha, the Tanakh, it's like this. We learn in a Mishnah, later on in Ormus Sechta, Hoya Oichel B'Truma, suppose a Kohen is eating Truma, and he has to be Toher while he's eating Truma, Vehirgesh Shiniz Dazu Evarav, and as he's eating, he feels that his limbs are trembling, meaning he feels that Zera has already left its place in his body and is going to be coming out very shortly. What should he do in order to prevent himself from becoming Tomei before he finishes eating the Truma? So he should grab a hold of his Amma, grab a hold of his Aver, to prevent the Zera from coming out. It's a Truma, and then he can swallow the Truma. That's in his mouth. Why does that work? Rashi explains, because the Gemara explains later, unlike a woman, a Nidah, where she becomes Tomei as soon as the blood leaves the uterus, even when it's still inside her body, a man becomes Tomei from Shechvas Zera, or Zov, for that matter, only when it actually leaves his body. So therefore, like this, he holds on to his Aver to prevent it from coming out. So what do you mean, Oiches? The Gemara says, what do you mean he holds on? Rabbi Eliezer says that if a person holds on to his organ and urinates, Kilo may be marble la'olam. It's like he's bringing a marble to the world because he's likely to cause that he's going to be motzi zera, and that was one of the averas that caused the world to be destroyed in the marble.
We talked about this somewhere in the last month.
No, I don't think so.
No, it's
mentioned. I think the other place the Gemara mentions is a Chabas. I don't think it came up recently, but I don't know.
Right.
Anyway, the Gemara points out in Sanhedrin that the Gemara has the expression, and Rashi brings it over here, Beroyschen, actually in Rosh Hashanah also, Beroyschen Kilkalu, Beroyschen Nidonu. The Dura Mabel, they sinned with Royschen, with something that's boiling, namely Zera. And they were, among other things, that they were moti zedel vatala, and they were punished with roiskin, with boiling water. Yeah. So therefore, Rabbi Eliezer says you're not allowed to hold on to when in order to urinate. So what do you mean over here? Oich is that he should hold on to his aver. Is that right? So the answer is Omar Abaye. So here is the original context where Abaye said b'matlis ova. That Omar Abaye b'matlis ova. We're not talking about holding with his bare hands. We're talking about holding it using a thick cloth. So therefore, because it's thick and because it's stiff, it won't have the effect of causing him to be moti zera l'batala.
Well,
yeah. Well, pants are not necessarily a matlis ova, but yeah. Mind you,
on the way you squeeze together, it can prevent from
Well, yeah, but that's not really Matt's solver. The problem is, on the face of it, if one's not by you anyway, you have the problem of it, but that might likely make things worse because it heats it up, stimulates it more. Mind you, by the way, on Ahmed Bey's, the Gemara is going to say, actually, you're not supposed to wear Mechnasayim at all, which Mechnasayim, the Pashtus means underwear or pants or something, because they have the same effect. They wrap around the Iver, and they can heat it up. How it is that we wear underwear and pants like that, we'll talk about that when we get to that Gemara, but it's actually, I think the Ritva already points out, like in his times, everybody wears pants, and he says, I don't understand where they got a heter for it, based on, given that the Gemara on the face of it says you're not supposed to. Anyway, whatever. Okay. So Rava Amar, Rava says you don't need that answer, that Davka uses a thick cloth. Afilo Tema B'matlis Raka, in that case where he's eating Truma, he could even use a soft cloth to hold it, because Kim and Akar, once the Shechat Zera is already about to come out of his body, it's already on its way out. So therefore, the fact that now he's going to stimulate it more with a soft cloth isn't going to make a difference. Abaya, what is Abaya answer to that? He says, Chayesh, Duma Osi La Isupi. Sure, okay, of course you have a certain amount that's already on its way out, but by holding it with a soft cloth and warming it up more, he's likely to make more. The Rava, Lo Chayesh, Duma Osi La Isupi. Rava, on the face of it, is not worried about that he's going to cause extra to come out. Once it's already coming out, then yeah. No, it's regular zera. No, we're talking about regular zera. Shechat zera is the normal stuff, the normal speech semen. No, that when it's a sickness and it comes out when the organ is limp, that's ziva.
Right.
There's a few different. Ziva is not well. So the difference is, among other things, that Rashi mentions over here. One is that shechat zera comes out when the organ is erect, is hard, and then ziva comes out when it's soft. Another difference is that shechat zera is white. And Ziva is off-white. Slightly different colors. Yeah. Okay. It comes from the same places in the body, but the Rambam defines it, for example, that Shechat Zera is a normal physiological thing, whereas Ziva comes from some kind of sickness. Okay. Anyway. So the question is, Veloy, why is Rava not worried about that if he's holding it with a soft cloth that it's going to stimulate it more and cause more Zera to come out? V'hatanya, we learn in a b'raisa, hol mazedoyma. What is this like? This that a person is going to be holding it with where is going to be holding on to it. L'noisin etzba ba'ayin. It's like putting a finger into the eye. Shekol zman she'etzba ba'ayin ayin midamas v'chazeres midamas. The more you keep a finger in your eye, the more it keeps on producing tears.
Oh.
So the same way, the more you keep on stimulating it, the more you keep on rubbing or touching or whatever, the more it's going to produce zera. So why is Rava not concerned about that point?
Well, it's grabbing and hold tight.
Well, but that's tight is also though. Tightness can also make it. Yeah. But the answer is the Rava. So Rava would answer kol ichmumi v'hadu ichmumi b'shaite lo shchiach, that he should get heated up and produce zera. And then get heated up right afterwards and produce more. Lo shchiach is very uncommon. Men have there's a certain period of time. It's shorter when you're younger, and then it gets older as it gets longer as you get older. There's a certain amount of time after a man has been stimulated and produces shchiach zera. It takes a while to be able to stimulate it again and produce more. So therefore, Rav is not concerned that in that short amount of time there's going to be an issue. Right? Gufa. Getting back to, we said Rabbi Eliezer, I'm a kala uchas ba'amo mashin kila maybe ma'baloy. Remember, Rabbi Eliezer says a person holds on to his organ and urinates as if he's bringing a marble to the world, because he's going to be moti zera l'matala. Amru loy lo Rabbi Eliezer. So they said to Rabbi Eliezer, don't you have a problem if you don't hold it out, while in itsotis mitaz in araglam. Don't you have a problem that drops of urine are going to drip onto his legs, onto his feet? And then it's going to appear like he's a krus shofcha, like he has, like the end of his aver is cut off. Which usually a person with that condition, a person who is a isn't able to urinate normally. His urine sort of dribbles out, so it's likely a lot of it is likely to land on his legs. A krus shofcha is also unable to have children, which is why the Torah in fact says that a psur dako krus shofcha are also to marry a bas yisrael. So, they're allowed to marry a Giyoris. They're allowed to marry a Giyoris, a Shechreres, or whatever, but they're not allowed to marry a regular Bastisra. No, the concept doesn't apply. Adarabba, the Rambam writes, based on the Gemara in Kedushin, a Kohen, who is a Psuah Dako, a Kurus Shofcha, is allowed to marry a Giyoris, even though usually as a Kohen he would not. But the fact that he's a Psuah Dako takes him out of the category of a Kohen as far as that goes.
It's all regular.
He can't have children. The whole point is, Kurus Shofcha can't have children. Right. So therefore, if a nymph moti laza bono shame amzerim, then it's going to cause that people are going to talk about how does this guy come to, how does this guy's wife come to have children? They must be mamzerim. She must have had relations with somebody else. So isn't that a problem? The Chachamim say to Rabbi Yehuda, why are you not saying that he should be allowed to hold his aver in order that it doesn't drip onto his legs, etc.? Amalahen, so Rabbi Yehuda says, I don't care. Mutab shiyoti laza bonav sheim mamzerim. Better they should cause that people are going to be talking and saying lashon hara about its children that they're mamzerim. Val yasa atme rosha shoach as a fnam makom. He shouldn't be for even a moment that rosha in front of Hashem by holding on to his aver and possibly causing himself to be motzi zera
l'matal. In most cases, this is not happening in the open. It's opening, happening privately.
Well, that's true, but it's neither here nor there. Well, that's true, but now actually Tosfos points out there's a Gemara elsewhere in Yuma that says that actually if drops do land on a person's leg, he is required to wipe them off precisely for this reason, in order not to be moti laz. However, Tosfos says what it is if you're holding on to it in the various ways that we're going to talk about over here, that according to some opinions you are allowed to, then fine, there's going to be some nitzotis, but not as many. Then wiping it is sufficient. When you don't hold on to it at all, and so much of it drips down onto the legs, even rubbing it off, even wiping it off is not going to be enough. There's still going to be enough left that people are still going to think he's a cross shuffle. But Rabbi Eliezer says, I don't care about that. Akoponim shouldn't be holding it, because you don't want it to be mostly dead a lot of it. Then we learn in another braisa. That in another braisa, also the Chachamim say to Rabbi Eliezer, what about the poor guy? People are going to think he's a cross shuffle, et cetera, et cetera. Amalehen Rabbi Eliezer, in the second braisa, Rabbi Eliezer says to them, Lachachamim, it doesn't, no, there's ways around it, there's ways around it without having to hold on to his aver. First of all, he can stand on a high place and then urinate down onto a lower place, and then it's not going to splash on his legs. Or he can urinate into loose dirt, and that way, again, it doesn't splash because it gets absorbed right in. And that way, this way, he's not going to make himself a rosha for even a moment in front of Hashem. Okay. So the question is, both of those are things that Rabbi Eliezer told the Chachamim, but the question is, what was the order? Hey, Amalahu Beresha. Which one did he say first? Are we going to say that he said to them that the Braises are listed, that we quoted the Braises in chronological order? First, he told them that it's okay, let them think that his children are mamzerim, etc. So what's the logic? What's the logic? After he told them the issue, then he's telling them, but here's a way around it. In other words, the Ritva says that the Gemara's question is, how did he use such a strong expression to begin with that let them think that his children are mamzerim? Let him to begin with tell them, you know what, actually there is a way around it. Yeah, to prevent the whole issue. So it's not logical it would have been that way. No, so it must be the second braisa came first. When they asked him, what should a person do? If you're saying that he can't be oiches ba'ama, then what should he do? So he tells them, okay, so let him stand on a high place and let him urinate into loose dust or whatever. Then the Omrule and the Chacham said to him, okay, that's all fine and good. So what happens if he doesn't have available a high place, if he doesn't have available loose dirt, then what should he do? And then comes with the first braise, in that case, even so, I'm still not master that he should be Oichaz Ba'ama. I still say let him be better Moitzi Laz on his children, and not to make himself a Rosha for even one moment in front of Hashem. The Gemara says, "V'chol kach lama." Why is Rabbi Eliezer so machmir on it that he shouldn't even hold his aver just for the purpose of urinating? Why not? The reason is mepeshem moti shichvas der levatala, because it's likely to lead to be moti shichvas der levatala, which is a serious avera. The Amar of Yechonon kolam moti shichvas der levatala chayev misa. The person who does that is chayev misa. You have the story with Er and Onan over there, Yehuda's sons. They have Yehuda's sons. Er, it doesn't say explicitly in the pasuk what he did, but since by Onan, the second son, it says Gam Oisai, so the Gemara explains it means both of them died for the same Avera, and by Onan, it says explicitly, so that he was wasting his Zera, and then letting it spill on the ground rather than make Tomer pregnant. So we see that it's Chayiv Mitzvah. With that said, by the way, now there are a number of Rishonim and Achronim who say that when we say over here Chayiv Misa, it's not necessarily. I mean, you have a list, for example, you have an official list of Averis that are Chayiv Misa B'Deshamayim, and this one isn't on that list. But I explained, it doesn't necessarily mean the person is chayav misa b'dei shamayim. It just may mean, it means, in other words, it's a very serious avera. It's worthy of misa. And it may be that the Hashem can choose to punish the person with misa. It's not like an automatic thing. Like you have certain things where it's automatically misa b'dei shamayim. But this isn't necessarily one of them.
Because you're just controlling the world and a dagger, hide a dagger, that's what they will punish for.
No, in fact, they're not, what the Gemara is saying is they're chayiv miser, they're chayiv miser. Well, so that's the point. In other words, Hashem can choose to punish a person with miser for it.
They will both choose.
I mean, they're both underage also, actually. If you look at the Seder of things in the Sukkim over there, you have the whole story over there with Yehuda marrying and having children and them growing up and marrying Tamar and so on and so forth, all happened. They're all fit within the 22 years that Yosef was away. But therefore, it means they were like 7, 8 years old. But in those times, they were old enough to be mature enough to be chayev for their actions.
That was left to his brothers and all that.
Right. The Alter Rebbe talks about, by the way, in Perek Zayin of Tanya, the Alter Rebbe talks about on the one hand, Motzi Zerah L'Vatala is a serious avera in a certain way more so than Arayas, in the sense that you have a lot more tumah that's being caused in the world. On the other hand, it's less so because the fact of the matter is, by Arayas you have a nekeva that's receiving, and you have the possibility of mamzerim as well. Whereas by Zerah L'Vatala you don't have that. Therefore, the Alter Rebbe says that's why it's not listed among the Bias Asuras, and that's why it doesn't need, and that's why it, there in Perek Zayin of Tanya, the Alter Rebbe talks about that maybe it doesn't need the same degree of tshuva as other Averis. It needs mainly Kriyas Shema Shalamita and other such things. And in Igeres HaTshuva, the Alter Rebbe takes a bit of a different view of it and says that he brings from Kitvei HaRizal that say that tshuva is not even effective for it. And the Alter Rebbe says, what do you mean tshuva is effective for anything? And he says over there, it means tshuva tata is not enough, you need tshuva ilah. The Alter Rebbe explains over there in detail what Shuvah Tatar versus Shuvah Ilah means. It means what kind of relationship are you redeveloping with Hashem? Yeah. Okay. Rabbi Yitzchok and Rabbi Ami, Amri, Rabbi Yitzchok and Rabbi Ami go further. They say, Ke'ilu Shoifich Domin, a person who is Motzi Zerah L'Vatala, it's like he's Shoifich Domin, it's like he's spilling blood. Because it could have been a child, right? Yeah. Shanema, as the Pasuk says in Yeshaya, Hanechomim Ba'elim, the ones that are criticizing the Rishayim, who heat themselves up, who excite themselves, Ba'elim, under the Ela trees, and Ela is an oak tree, because that's a popular place to do these kinds of things, Tachas Kol Eitz Ra'anan, under every leafy tree, Shoichtei Hayalodim Manacholim, those who slaughter children in the valleys, Tapas Te'ifei Asloim, under the cleft of the rocks. On the surface, the Pasuk is talking about people who were offering their kids Tavad Azara, like the Moilach and whatever, like they did in those days. But Al Tikri, Shoichtei Elof Soichtei, the Gemara says, don't read Shoichtei that they shech, but rather Soichtei, they squeeze out. So therefore, so in other words, they're heating themselves up, they're stimulating, they're exciting themselves, and they're causing that Soichtei. Rav Asi, Amakila Ovid Avodas Kechavim. Rav Asi says further, a person who does this, it's like he's worshiping Avodah Zarah. Ksiv Hocha Tachas Kol Eitz Ra'anan, because the Pasuk over here describes them doing this under every leafy tree. Ksiv Asim, and you have a Pasuk in Parashas Re'eh. Allah Horim Haramim Vatachas Kol Eitz Ra'anan. Where did the Goyim worship Avodah Zarah? On every high mountain and under every leafy tree. So over here, the Pasuk in Yeshaya that mentions under a leafy tree is creating an association with Avodah Zarah. It's interesting, by the way, there's a fascinating tshuva from Moshe Feinstein on the subject of a bocher or a younger man or whatever wrote to him that he was having a real problem with this and what should he do as far as tshuva. And Rav Moshe goes through the relevant sources in halacha and gives him details about how he should go about doing tshuva, and then mentions of course this gemara over here, and says, and he mentions this idea that I was saying before, that when we say over here that it's chayav misa, it doesn't, you know, it's first, it's not listed on the official things that are chayav misa b'dei shamayim, but still it's very serious. And he tells him, you know, on the one hand, you need to realize it's serious. On the other hand, don't think that there's no way for you to do tshuva. And he gives him a program on how to go about it. Yeah. Okay. So they're going to tell a story in this connection. Rabbi Yehuda and Shmuel have a kaimia igra. Rabbi Yehuda and Shmuel was Rabbi Yehuda's rebbe, were standing at igra on the roof, debay knishta deshaf v'yosef bin hadar. On the roof of the shul of Shof V'Yosef in Nahadah. What is Shof V'Yosef? Over here, Rashi explains that it means it's a neighborhood in the city of Nahadah. In other places, Rashi brings, and also the Aruch brings, that Shof V'Yosef literally means it moved and it resettled. And so the explanation is that this is actually, it was built by the Jews who were brought to Babel 11 years before the Churban, the Chodesh Ramasko that were brought by Nebuchadnezzar. They brought with them earth from Eretz Yisrael and used that to build this shul, and the Shechina, so to speak, left the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim and came and rested in this shul.
So they were in Golos.
Like they carried dirt. So they carried, yeah.
Imagine that that's
what
it was
never
longer than they had
in the dirt. Yeah, that's so. That was the urban dimension, yeah. So they built this shul, and it was called Shof V'Yosiv, that it moved and it was settled, because the earth that it was made out of was moved from Eretz Yisrael and settled in Babel, and the Shechina moved from the Beis HaMikdash and settled there. Anyway, so Rav Yehuda and Shmuel are standing on the roof of this shul. Amalei Rav Yehuda l'Shmuel tzarechani l'ashtin. Rav Yehuda says to Shmuel, I need to urinate, what should I do? And apparently there wasn't... Shmuel, Rav Yehuda is asking his Rebbe, Shmuel, what should I do? Apparently the situation was such, as the Gemara is going to say soon, it was at night, so apparently there wasn't enough time to get down off the roof and go find a quiet place to do it. So what should he do? Amalei, so Shmuel tells him, Shinina, sharp one, which is Shmuel's famous nickname for Rav Yehuda, Echoiz ba'amoscha b'hashtin l'chut. Hold on to your aver, so the urine doesn't fall onto the roof of the shul, because that would be degrading to the shul, and urinate outwards, so that the urine goes and arcs off onto the ground near the shul. So the question is, what do you mean, hold on to your amor? How could you do that? Vartanya, we just said before in the Brice, it's like he's bringing a marble to the world. So how is Shmuel telling Rabbi Yehuda that he's allowed to do it? The answer is, Shmuel is treating this case like the case of a Boileshes. Boileshes is an army unit that goes searching around in people's houses. Like you have, for example, you know, in those days, it was a very common thing. Like, you know, an army comes to town and they start searching through the houses for spoils that they can take for themselves and then foraging for food and supplies and whatever for the army. So we have a Mishnah, Ditznan. We learn in a Mishnah in Avodah Zarah. Beleshes shenichnes. Now the problem is, what if it's a Goyish army? What happens to the wine in the houses? If they're going and looking through all the houses and looking for everything they can find, what happens to the wine? Is it Yain Nesach because Goyim touched it? So the Mishnah says, Beileshes shenichnas la'ir, if this Beileshes, this army unit that's foraging for food, if they come into a city, v'sha'at shalom, if it's a time of peace, and they're just coming in because they need a place to stay, basically, then the din is chobis tsuchas asuris, any open barrels of wine are also, because they may have touched them, and then they became yayin nesach, asumus mutaris, any sealed barrels are mutar, because they obviously didn't open them, but if they're coming into the city during wartime, both the open and the closed ones are mutter, because the army are busy with the war, and therefore they don't have time to do nisuch. They don't have time to touch the wine, to actually stick their hand into the barrel and do nisuch.
Nisuch means the hand or to say the burden which make
No, well, just dibur wouldn't make it also. No, it would have to be that they actually touched the wine and did at least what's called shichshuch, like they stirred or moved around the wine in the container or whatever. But if it's in wartime, we're saying even the open barrels, they're coming into the houses and then taking whatever they find or whatever, but they don't necessarily have the time because they're busy with the war to actually go in and start sticking their hands into barrels and then. So therefore, Alma, so we see from that, given to be Issi, since these soldiers are afraid, because it's during wartime and at any time the enemy might come, Loi Osil and Asuchi, so we say they're not going to come to do Nisuch, because they don't have the time for it. Hochanami, the same thing over here. Shmuel would say, says Habaya, given to be Issi, since he's afraid, and we're going to see in a second, what is Rabbi Yehuda afraid of? Loi Osil Haruri, so there's not a problem that he's going to come to hear her by holding his Aver. So the question is, what exactly is the fear that Rabbi Yehuda has that Shmuel is therefore matter? So that's one answer is there's the fear of the night and of the roof. It's a night time and he might fall off if he's not careful. Another possibility is the fear of his Rebbe, because Shmuel, his Rebbe, is standing right there. Another possibility is the fear of the Shechina, because you have, if this particular shul, it's not just any shul, we said this is the special shul in all of Babel, where the Shechina rests on a very high level, so therefore the fear of that would keep him from having Machshava Zaris. Another possibility is he has in general a strong Yiras Shemayim. So even if he wasn't in particular on the roof of this shul, anywhere he was, for him it would be Mutter. to Koresh Shmuel Alei, as we find that Shmuel says about Rabbi Huda, Ein Ze Yulud Isha. This one was not born from a woman. In other words, he's more that he's superhuman, and he's superhuman in his Yiras Shemayim. Yeah. The Boyis Ema, yet another answer, a fifth answer, Nosui Hava. Another answer is that Rabbi Huda, when this story happened, was already married. And how does that help? The Amr of Nachman, Im Hoya Nosui Mutter. If he's married, says Rav Nachman, then he's Mutter. Because then you have a concept called Pas B'Saloi. He has, so to speak, this bread in his basket. Right. His wife is available. So therefore, he's less likely to come to hear her because he can always go home. And which, by the way, a number of the posts can say that would only apply, and the Alphadeva brings it in Shulchan Aruch, among others, that would only apply, therefore, if his wife actually is available. But if she's out of town or she's nidah or whatever, then you don't have that heter. Okay. The Boris Sema, yet another possibility, ki ha'orile. Another possibility is that when Shmuel told Rabbi Huda to hold on to the Amma, he wasn't telling him to actually hold on. He wasn't telling him to actually hold on to the Amma, but rather to something else in that area. The Tony Abba Breder of Binyamin Barchia, as Abba, the son of Binyamin Barchia, Torah Braisa, Abba Masayeya Bebetsim Milamata. You're not allowed to hold the Aver itself, but you are allowed to hold it up, to support it by holding up the Beitzim from underneath, and that causes it to stick out. So therefore, Shmuel could be telling Rabbi Yehuda, leaving aside all the other answers, we could say he wasn't telling him to hold the actual Amma, but rather to hold the Beitzim.
Right.
And that would be allowed.
This could be also another reason why you have to have some people, I guess. Those days they didn't have, but they have the underwear that supports the...
That's true also, yeah.
Special old people.
Yeah. The Iboyesema Kiha Oriway, yet another possibility is that Shmuel's psak to Rabbi Yehuda, telling him to hold on to the Amma, was based on the following statement. The Amr of Abo, Amr of Yechanan, Gvul Yeshloi, there is a limitation. When we say that you're not allowed to touch the Amma, there is a limitation. Me'af Torah ulamata mutter. It is mutter to touch it or to hold it from below the Atara. The Atara is the area, the crown is the area over there where the Orla was attached before the Bris Milah. From there to the end slopes. That area, if he holds on, it's not going to stimulate him, it's not going to cause any Moti Zerah Levatala, as opposed to the rest of it. Me'af Torah, or Maila also, but above that, it was towards the body, it would be also. So that's another possibility. It's Shmuel was telling us. No, the other one. No, what we mean is, in other words, that, so you have, is it comes from the body, and so you have the long tube, then it comes to the Atara, from there it narrows. From the Atara until the end, until the tip, you would be allowed to hold it, because that's not the area that holding on is going to stimulate him. So therefore, that's another possibility, is Shmuel is telling Rabbi Yehuda to hold it over there. Okay. All right, continue with the Gemara. Omer Rav, getting back to this matter of Motzi Zera Levatala, Omer Rav, Hamakasha Asmi Ladas Yehei Ben Nidri, a person who causes himself to become erect should be in Nidri. Tosfos says it doesn't necessarily mean that he's automatically in Nidri. What it means, Beis Din has the obligation, if they know about it, to put him in Nidri. I think there are some other Mephoshim who say that it means basically he's in Nidri Min HaShemayim. So the Gemara says, Valema Osir, why does Rav have to say the expression Yehei Ben Nidri? Let him just say flat out it's Osir. The answer is because you have a different issue. Aside from the issue of Motzi Zera L'Vatala, the problem is the Megari Yetzahara Anapshe. He's exciting and stimulating the Yetzahara in himself, but now he's making himself more likely to have Machshava Zaris and to desire Bia, which can even lead to Isurim, etc. Yeah. So therefore, that's why Rav is not just saying it's awesome, it's sad, the point of Zera Levatala, but also that he's on top of it, he's also making himself more likely to, yeah. But Rav Ami Omer Nikra Avaria, and Rav Ami says that a person is called a habitual sinner, a person who habitually does Averis. Shekach Omer Nusar She Yetzahara, because this is the way the Yetzahara works, that person. Hayom Omer Le'asei Kach, today he tells him do this. The next day he tells him to do this. The next day he tells the guy, go worship Avodah Zarah, and he goes and worships. So therefore, in other words, Rav Ami is saying a similar kind of thing. It's a slippery slope. A person starts with this, and eventually it's an opening for the Yetzirah to lead him to worse and worse events. By the way, in Chassidus it talks about that the beginning, Hayom Yom Malay Afsei Kach, isn't even necessarily an Avera to begin with. Sometimes you even have the Yetzirah starts out getting to a person, do a mitzvah, but don't do it because the Eibishter just said so, do it because it appeals to you or because you'll get something out of it or whatever, and then you, okay. Ikadamri, Amarabami, another version of how this goes, as Rabami said, Kolam may be asking of the day here, a person who causes himself to have here, to have thoughts, to have such thoughts of beer, Ein Machnissin Oseb Chitzasa Shalakarish Baruch Hu. They don't allow him into the inner chamber with Hashem. In other words, he doesn't get to a high level in Gan Eden. Why? We see by Aaron Oinon it's described that he did evil in the eyes of Hashem. In Tillim, it says, you, Hashem, do not desire wickedness. Evil does not dwell with you. So in other words, anything that's described as evil cannot, any person who does what's described in the pasuk as evil cannot be together in closeness with Hashem. On the side of here, it brings in other places. You have in other places it brings, and the Rif brings it in this connection also. That in other places, the Gemara explains that it means lo yogur b'megur chara. Evil will not dwell in your close dwelling place, Hashem. Okay. V'amar Rav Elazar. Also, Rav Elazar says here's another point about this. My dichtiv, what does it mean? It says in the pasuk, Yedeichem domim maleu. Yeshaya, it's in Haftarah of Shabbos Chazayin, Yeshaya criticizes the people. He says, your hands are full of blood. So what does that refer to? Elo hamanafim biyad. This refers to people who do niuf with their hands. They use their hands to stimulate their aver and cause themselves to be moti zera levatala. So Yeshaya is criticizing them for it. We had the pasuk that we mentioned on Amud Aleph also. It was also from Yeshaya. And Echamim Ba'elim, that was also from Yeshaya. So apparently it was a bit of a widespread problem in his times. Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, in the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, they learned a different way of saying it. The pasuk says, from the Aseret HaDibros, Loi Sinaf, do not do niuf. Now Rashi on the pasuk explains over there that primarily niuf means to be mezaneh with an eshes ish. But more generally, niuf means immorality. And after all, Marshall points out, the pasuk doesn't say loisinaf in eishes ish or something like that. It just says boldly loisinaf. Therefore, it refers also loitahei b'chon niuf. So it means there should not be any niuf, any of this kind of immorality by you, bein b'yad, bein b'rego, whether the person stimulates it by rubbing it against his hand or against his leg. Either way, it's included in loisinaf. Tananabon. We learn in a braisa in this connection, hagerim v'amasachkin b'tinokas, gerim, and people who play with children, meaning play inappropriately with children, little boys, or little tinokas, actually we're going to say soon, whether it means little boys or little girls, we'll get to that in a second, ma'afbenes ha-mashiach, such people prevent Mashiach from coming. So the question is, b'shlema gerim, I can understand in a certain way what's the problem with gerim. It's based on Kiddur Reb Chelboy. It's based on what Reb Chelboy says. The Omer Reb Chelboy, Reb Chelboy says, a famous thing, Koshin gerim liyisroel kasapakas. Gerim are as difficult and as much of a hardship for the Jewish people as a sapakas, which is a type of saras. Now, what's wrong with gerim? We know that gerim are a very important thing in Jewish history. We have a lot of respect for them. So what does it mean? So Rashi over here gives a couple of explanations. One of them is that gerim are often not familiar with the details of mitzvah, so therefore they get punished for it, and they cause punishment to come on the Jewish people. Another answer, Rashi says, is that sometimes born Jews learn from the gerim. A ger came from a goyisha background, after all. He still has goyisha habits and mentalities and whatever a lot of times. So therefore, Yid learns from him, and therefore a problem develops with that. Rashi brings another explanation that maybe what it is koyisrael arevim zebazeh, and therefore that born Jews are held responsible for the gerim. Rashi says not really, based on Gemara and Sota. Tosfos then disagrees with that and says there is in fact Arevos on Gerim. Anyway, Tosfos gives other reasons. Another one is because you have a Gemara in Kiddushin that says that the Shechina only rests on the families of the Jewish people that have good Yuchsin, where there's no Gerim or Mamzerim or whatever mixed in among them. So like this one, Gerim intermarry with the Jewish people, it causes that there's less of a chance for the Shechina. That's fine, but the fact of the matter is there's still not Mishpachas Miyuchasis. For example, you have a din that is actually in today's Shlosha Parakim of Rambam, that for example, if you have a family that's been throughout the generations only gerim, a kohen is not allowed to marry a girl from such a family. It's still not considered that they have enough yichus for a kohen. Yeah. Oh, there you go also. Yeah. Okay. There's a lot of different answers. There's a lot of other different explanations what this Koshim Gerim Yisroel Kapachas is, and one of them actually toasts this in one place in Kedushin, brings a very complimentary one that's very complimentary to Gerim. They quote it in the name of Rabbi Abraham Hager. So he himself was a gayer, so he has something good to say about this. He says a little bit sort of the opposite of the first explanation that Rashi said. Just the opposite. Gayrim are so extra careful with mitzvahs that they make the born Jews look bad. So therefore, like Hashem looks and says, you know, if the gayer can do it so well, why can't you? Okay, anyway, so there's a lot of different reasons.
Okay, so we learned that also with the play in Sayyuksen.
Mm-hmm.
He's speaking about Kutum.
Kutum is a different matter,
but he brings down that they were so fantastic in mitzvahs in certain areas.
Oh, that's true, right.
Their own
true. We're actually going to learn that later on in Arma Sechta as well. We're going to talk about that in the fourth paragraph. Okay. Okay, so we can understand why it is that Gerim in a certain sense are preventing Mashiach from coming because of all these issues. Ela Masakin B'Tinokas Mayhi. What do we mean this about people that play around with children? What do we mean that they prevent Mashiach from coming? Ilema Mishkav Zohar. Do we mean that they actually go and they do Mishkav Zohar? B'nei Skilin. What do you mean? You're saying only they prevent Mashiach from coming? Like it's not, you know, as if, like, so to say, it's not so bad. What do you mean? They're Chayiv Misa. They're Chayiv Skilin. Yeah. Are you talking about, okay, so they don't do it actually, they don't actually penetrate, but like they rub it against the zevorim or whatever, so it's moitzi zerel batala. Okay, but also, b'nei mabel minu, we said on Omer Aleph, that's just people are bringing a mabel to the world. Saying that they delay Mashiach's coming is like the least worst thing that you could say about them. It should be much worse. Ella, no. What we mean is we're not talking about boys or at all. What we mean is dinasivik tamis. We're talking about older men, mature men, who marry young girls. Now, the man himself is able to do periviribi. He's fertile. He's able to have children. Meanwhile, the girl is not old enough to have children yet. So therefore, it comes out that for a period of time. Fine. It's not that. You can't say that it's also for him to marry her. The fact is it's mutter for him. But on the other hand, he's preventing that children are being born all that time until she grows up. So therefore, in that sense, he's delaying Mashiach. So that's why we're using such a mild expression about him, that he's delaying Mashiach. He's not actually doing an Avera per se, but on the other hand, he's bottled from period for India. The lab no say ludin, you know, girls of that age are not capable of having children yet. So what's the problem with that? The Amr Rabbi Yossi says, Ein ben Dovin Mashiach will not come. Ad sheyichlu kol neshamos shebeguf, until all the neshamos in guf are used up. Guf, Rashi explains here and in various other places, is the name of the chamber in Shemayim where the neshamos are kept. So only when that chamber is emptied of neshamos will Mashiach come. Tosfos, by the way, brings a fascinating thing over here. Tosfos says, what do you mean? We always grow up learning, and the famous Gemara and Shabbos that says that if the Jewish people cut two Shabbosos, then Mashiach would come. How does that fit with this? So Tosfos says, okay, and if the Jewish people would keep two Shabbosos, what would happen is all of a sudden the birth rate would explode and all the Neshamas would come out of goof right away. Marsha over here says, so, I mean, how are you talking? Let's say you had millions of Neshamas left there, all of a sudden they're all going to be born in such a short amount of time. So Marsha says, maybe what Tosfos means is al derech, like there's a medrash, where I think Rabbi Akiva one time says to his Talmidim, there was a woman in Mitzrayim who gave birth to 600,000. And his Talmidim, what are you talking about? How is that possible? He explains, I'm talking about Yecheved, who gave birth to Moshe Rabbeinu, whose neshama was a neshama klolis that includes the whole 600,000 Jewish people. So Marsha says the same thing over here. What we can mean is that neshamas klolis will be born at that point, which include many smaller neshamas within them, and that way goof is emptied out.
Instead of having dogs,
they'll have indeed. Yeah, Shenema, as the pasuk says, Ki ruach milafana yatef. Hashem says, the beginning of that pasuk says that Ki loyla olam order v'loyla nesach esef. I won't be fighting and I won't be angry with the Jewish people forever. Why? Ki ruach milafana yatef. Because a spirit will wrap itself, will be born, in other words, from me. Yatef actually brings like a pasuk v'hatuf from the Laban, the ones who are wrapped up, the older sheep belong to Yaakov. Uneshamas and Yatsisi and the neshamas that I made. In other words, Hashem is saying eventually there's going to come a point when all the neshamas that I made are yatef. They're going to be coming down into this world and wrapped up in a body. And at that point, loyla olam oriv loyla nesachay. At that point, I'm not going to be angry with the Jewish people anymore. And Mashiach is going to come. So therefore, again, this guy who marries a younger girl who's not capable of having children yet is delaying Mashiach thereby. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, Ba'anoshim Tikotzit, we said that a man who does bedikas on himself to check whether he has zera, his hand should be cut off, because as we were saying in the whole Gemara over here, he's causing himself to be moitzi zera l'vatalah. The question we have is, dinatnan or latusatnan? When the Mishnah says tikotzit, is it actually an actual din, that if a beis din finds out that he's doing this, they should chop off his hand? Or is it latusa, is it just a curse, that the Mishnah is saying that the person deserves to have his hand cut off? So, dinatnan, is it an actual din, kihod Rav Huna kos yod? As we find an example where Rav Huna actually chopped off somebody's hand. Not for this, Rashi explains, Rashi brings from Sanhedrin, that if the Gemara says in Sanhedrin that if a person picks up his hand against somebody else to hit him, then his hand deserves to be cut off. So the Gemara says over there that Rav Huna actually once did that. He actually cut off somebody's hand for doing that. Mestama, the guy was doing it over and over, I don't know, but whatever. The point is, we see that there is a concept that Beis Din is empowered to do such things when they need to. Or again, it's just a curse. The Mishnah is not saying that Beis Din should actually do it, but the Mishnah is saying he deserves to have that happen. Toshma, Detanya, Rav Tarfon Omer, Yod la'ama tikotzit. Rav Tarfon says that if a person puts his hand on his ama, on his organ, tikotzit, then it deserves tikotzit yodai al taburai. His hand should be cut off on his stomach. On the face of it, it means like you put his hand on his stomach and then chop it off. Amrulai, so the Chachamim said to him, Yoshav like coats the creator loyiflanu. So what are you telling me? If a person has a thorn, a splinter stuck in his creasei, then should he not take it out? Now, what does creasei mean over here? The Magen Avraham on Shulchan Aruch and some other mafreshim say that creasei over here is a euphemism for his aver. So it means, in other words, if he got something stuck in his aver, we're not talking about with sakaris nefashis. We're talking about where it's just painful. Are you telling me you shouldn't take it out? Some of the other mafoshim seem to explain that it does mean kresa. It does mean his stomach in the simple sense because, putting his hand over there is likely to lead further down. Anyway, omer lahem loy. So he says, no, indeed, I would say that not. So they say, probably kresa nifkas. What do you mean his stomach is going to burst open? This part, Yoshua like quotes the Kreise, by the way, the Marshal has it in parenthesis because the Marshal takes it out because he says that's more relevant to later in the Gemara. Right now, the Gemara is not assuming we're talking about splinters or whatever. Right now, the Gemara is assuming that it sounds like what Reb Tarfon is saying is you literally have to take the guy's hand and put it on his stomach and then chop it off there. So the question is, in that case, it's going to burst open his stomach as well because the cut is going to, yeah. So he says the Amalahan, he says the Mukhut Baka Kresai. Okay, so what? Better let his stomach be split open, Valyer the Be'er Shachas, that he shouldn't have to go down to Be'er Shachas again. So Iyam at the Shlema Dinatnan. If you say that our Mishnah is saying a din, that a person who is touching himself over there, the Beis Din should actually cut off his hand, Hainu Dam, we have I like Kresin Yivkas. Then we understand what the Chachamim are objecting to the Tarifin. If you put his hand on his stomach and then chop it off over there, inevitably they're going to cut into his stomach. Eli Yam of Latursatnan, but if you say the Mishnah is only telling us a curse, what he deserves to have happened to him, so what's the problem? My Kresin Yivkas. What's going to break open? Yeah. So the Gemara says, Elamai din, it's none. So what? So you're going to say that after all, the Mishnah is telling us a din, that Beis Din should do this? Loi sagi di lav al taburai. Does it have to necessarily be on his stomach? And if they put his hand on the chopping block, how's it going to be any different? Why do they dafka? Why would the Chacham assume it dafka has to be placed on his stomach? No. Ela hachikom Reb Tarfon. No, what it means rather is like this. Reb Tarfon is saying as follows. Kol amachnis yodri lamata mitaburai. Anybody who puts his hand under his belly button, under his navel, and again, here you have the Magen Avraham again says that the Gemara doesn't actually mean below his belly button, it means on his aver, tikotzit, deserves to be cut off. Omer lo Reb Tarfon, so then in that case, they ask Reb Tarfon, according to what you're saying, Yoshua like coats the kresei, so if he has a thorn or a splinter stuck into kresei, lo yitlenu, do you want him to not take it out? Omer lahem lo, he says no, in fact, yeah, let him leave it there. That's going to cause his stomach to split open from the pain. Now, again, we don't mean literally where it's going to split open, where it would be the kuach nefesh. We're talking about, in other words, where it's going to be very painful. He says, even so, better let him suffer that pain rather than having to go to Gehenna. So is the halacha like Reb Tarfon? So you have some of the achronim learn the Rambam to be saying that yes. Many of the other Achronim, though, disagree. And in any case, in Shulchan Aruch, actually, it's like this. These halachas are dealt with in two places in Shulchan Aruch. You have, they're in Aruch Chaim Simen Gimel, in the halachas of going to the bathroom. And then they're also in Evna Ezer, Simen Chof Gimel, where it talks about the various dinim over there involved with marriage. And then you have a Simen over there, Simen Chof Gimel, about not being Moitzi Zerah Vatala. So in Evan Ezer, the Machaber brings the Gemara over here that he shouldn't be putting his hand lamasa mitaburoi. I think what it says over there is only if he's not married. If he's married, then like we said before, pas pasaloi. So there's more reason to be makel. Although even then they say midas chasidus would be, Tosfos brings at the bottom of Omer Aleph, midas chasidus would be even not them. Rebbe, for example, says about himself that he never put his hand below his belt. Anyway, on the other hand, in Or HaChaim, it talks about over there that not necessarily, it says you can't put his hand on his aver, but he could put it below his stomach. He could put it like at the bottom of his stomach below his navel. And then as far as the various answers that the Gemara gave, some of them are accepted lahalocha, some not. The one about, for example, that Rabbi Yehuda had exceptional Yiras Shemayim, okay, that applies only to him. But for example, you have, when it comes to urinating, for example, so you have among the Hekerim are the one about holding towards the end, the bottom part of it, below the Atara, because that's not going to stimulate him. Another one is the Masayeya Bebeitzim, holding it up using the Beitzim in order to cause. And in fact, it says in Shulchan Aruch, you should be doing one of those things because after all, we don't want to have like what they were arguing with Rabbi Eliezer, that it's going to dribble on his feet, and that he's going to dribble on his feet, and people are going to think he's a Kruz Shachar. So if possible, he should be doing it from a high place to a low place, or like nowadays, we do it in a toilet, and that avoids splashing, that neatly avoids getting it on his feet, or into loose dirt, or whatever. If not, then he's able to hold it L'mata Me'atara, or Maseyeh Bebeitzim. And technically, again, if he's a married man and past the Salah, then technically he's allowed to hold it in any way, but even then, it says in Shulchan Aruch, better he shouldn't. Mishnah says, Hachershes, so okay, we said women have to do bedikas, so what about Hachershes, a woman who is a deaf mute, and halacha always considers therefore that she doesn't have enough das, and in those days, by the way, that's how it was, because a deaf mute is somebody who was born deaf, or became deaf at a very young age, so therefore they never learned to speak either, they didn't have the concept of being able to teach deaf people to speak. So therefore, then she's never going to be able to hear anything from anybody. She's never going to be able to communicate with anybody. Therefore, practically speaking, you can't assume that she has any das. And therefore, halacha always assumes that she doesn't. Nowadays, where you have the ability to educate deaf people and they can even learn to speak, you have some poskim achronim who say that in that case, maybe they don't have the status of that. Okay, anyway. So achershes v'ashoita, or woman who is a shoita, who is a sub, crazy or otherwise subnormal or whatever. Vasuma, or a woman who's blind, so she can't see the bedikah cloth, Vishanitra Fadaita, or a woman who's gone crazy, which is what the Gemara is going to point out, is a little bit different than a shota. A shota is like she was born that way. Nitra Fadaita would mean, for example, she became sick, and it affected her brain. Anyway, Im Yeshlehen Pikchos, if they have friends who are Pikchos, who are normal, Mesaknes Oysan, those friends can be Mesakin them, they can do the bedikahs for them, and check the bedikahs. And have them go to the mikveh when they need to. Behin oichos the truma, and then those women, the chereshes, etc., will be able to eat truma. Because like this, if they don't have a friend to help them, then they might be tummy at any time. They can't eat truma. But if they have a friend who can help them, they can stick in the bedikah cloth and check it and get them to the mikveh, etc., then they'll be able to eat truma.
People are not married.
Well, it doesn't matter whether they're married or it doesn't matter. Yeah, we're talking about as far as truma matter, right? So the Gemara asks, why can't a Chershes check for herself? I mean, she can see, she can feel around, and she can see or whatever. Titania, Omer Rebbe, in fact, we learn in a Braisa, Rebbe says, Chershes hoise b'shchunaseinu, there was a Chershes in our community, in our neighborhood, Loi daya shebedekas l'asma, and she was so expert in the colors of blood that are tamei and nafs. And to her that not only she would be able to do bedikas for herself, but her friends over there would do their own bedikas, and then they'd bring them to her to ask them whether they're tamei or not. The answer is that case was talking about she was able to speak, but she just couldn't hear. So she hadn't been born deaf; she had been born normal. She learned to speak later in life. She became deaf. Sure, then she's like any other normal person. Whereas our Mishnah is talking about she doesn't speak and she doesn't hear, meaning again she became deaf at a very young age, or even when she was before she was born. Whatever.
There's no sign language she is back
in. There's no sign language in those days, exactly. Kedetan. In fact, we learn in a Mishnah in Trumas, almost any place in Shas where the Chachamim speak of a cheresh, It means somebody who can't speak and who can't hear and can't speak, and therefore he's considered to not have das. But if in the case of the woman in Rebbe's neighborhood, she was able to speak; she just wasn't able to hear. The Mishnah had said Hasuma, a blind woman. That's the same thing. She needs somebody else to do the bedikah for her. So the question is, why? She can do the bedikah for herself. Okay, she can't see the blood. But so what? The women in Rebbe's neighborhood weren't able to tell the color of the blood either, and they brought it to their deaf friend. Why can't this blind woman also? She'll bring it to a rabbi, or she'll bring it to one of her friends or whatever, and ask her to check it. So why does she need somebody else to do the bedikah for her? You're right. Summa ain't a Mishnah. The word Summa does not belong in our Mishnah. You're right. A blind woman would be able to do her own bedikas. She just needs to give them to somebody else to check. Then we said Bishanitra for Daita. We said if she went crazy, the question is Heiner Shaita. Isn't that the same thing as a Shaita? The answer is Shanitra for Daita Machnas Chodi. Nitra for Daita means that she lost her mind because of illness, as opposed to a Shaita was born that way or whatever. Okay. Tananabam. We learned in a Braisa. In this connection, so we're talking about women who are shoitas. Now let's talk about a man who's a shoita. After all, you have the same problem. He might be a zav, he might be a balkeri. So koyen shoita, so a koyen, a male koyen who's a shoita, makbilin oso, they can have him tovel, machilin oso truma la'erev, and they can have him eat truma that evening. Or mishamrin oso shalo yishan. And whenever they're going to do that, they have to make sure he doesn't fall asleep. Because if he falls asleep, he may become a balkeri while he's asleep. So the question is, at Yoshen Tome, if he falls asleep, then we have to assume he's Tome, because he might have been, the kazera might have come out without him noticing. Lo Yoshen Tome, but if he didn't sleep, then he's Tome. Rebbe Lezer Ben Tzadik says, you don't need that. You can let him sleep. We can make for him a pouch made out of leather that he'll wear around that area. And that way, if there's any zera. Yeah, whatever. Exactly, yeah. So you put a diaper on him, basically, yeah. And if they want to give him truma, you check in there and see if there's any zera. That's no good kosher gesher, maybe the day shimum. That's going to stimulate him even more because you have a tight-fitting thing around that area. Omerland, sort of the laws of the project says, in that case, so according to you, it comes out, there's nothing you can do for a shoita. What are you supposed to do in order that the poor guy should be able to eat truma? Omerulai, the Chacham answered him, we don't have a problem. Yoshin Tomila, Yoshin Tar. Like we said, after they tovel him, all they have to do is make sure he doesn't sleep after that before he eats truma. Lo Yoshin, and if he goes to sleep, he's Tomil, lo Yoshin Tar. If he doesn't go to sleep, he's Tar. The dvarecha, but even according to you, even aside from the problem shemayi the dechimum that it's going to cause him to be stimulated, there's a different problem. Shema yira tipa chardol v'tibala b'kid. What if he only has a drop of shikva sera, only the size of a mustard seed, and it gets absorbed into this pouch? Yes, the pouch is made out of leather, but it doesn't mean it can't absorb anything. It'll absorb a tiny bit. It would absorb, and then he'll be tummy, and you won't know. Yeah, that's enough to make him tummy. Yeah. Tana Mishum Rebbe Lazar, we learn in a braisa in the name of Rebbe Lazar, Mishum Rebbe Lazar Amru, they said in the name of Rebbe Lazar, what you should do is, in that case, make him a pouch made out of metal. Metal won't absorb at all, so even if there's a drop, you'll find it. It's uncomfortable, but okay. Abai says specifically, out of the various kinds of metal, you have to make it out of copper. Kidatani, why copper? Because copper is less absorbent than the other ones. Yeah. Kidatani, as we learn in a brisa, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Royin Oisen Giv Oilen Shal Ezo Kila Hin Nechoshes. Rabbi Yehuda says, now we learned in the first parak that there has to be a minimum amount of parad or water in a keli in order to do hazah. You can't have so little that you have to like scrape the water off the sides of the container. So it has to be. So there has to be enough to be able to dip the tips of the pieces of the branches of Ezov into the water. So Rabbi Yehuda says, Royin Oisin Giv Olin Kilo Hein Shal Nechoshes. Rabbi Yehuda says, you consider as if these Giv Olin, as if these stalks of Ezov were made out of copper, because copper doesn't. In other words, the fact is Ezov is absorbent, so it absorbs some of the water. Rabbi Yehuda says, I don't care about that. As long as there's enough water that if you were to take pieces of copper and dip them in, there would be enough to actually dip the tips in. Then it's okay, even though these are actually Ezov and they will absorb something. So we see Rabbi Yehuda is using copper as the best example of something that doesn't absorb. So therefore, by the same token over here, we're saying that what you should do is make him a pouch made out of copper. So this is, as far as Shechvat Zera, it's not necessarily that you do that, but the Rambam does bring this concept when it comes to, for example, if this Kohen is a Shoita and you have a problem that he's a Zov, you have then you have the same issue. So then what you do, actually for anybody who's a Zov or whatever, for a Shoita who's a Zov, what you do is exactly that. You make him a pouch out of copper and put it around that area, and that way if there's any Ziva, then you'll see it because it won't get absorbed at all. Okay. We'll continue tomorrow, Bez Hashem.